The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, our listeners know that you're focusing your day job with Football Radar is on Japanese football, but you got to have a really special personal footballing experience last midweek.
Yeah, absolutely. I had an incredible time at the England-Germany game at Wembley, the first game I've been to in like before since this pandemic started. And it was just, yeah, kind of something never experienced before, England beating Germany in a major tournament. It was an incredible atmosphere with, I think, 43,000 managed to get in at Wembley. I got really lucky to get the tickets the day before. And, yeah, unbelievable. I mean, yeah, as I said, I can't really explain how it felt when Sterling scored, and yeah, it was just an incredible day. And yeah, I'm trying to focus on the Japanese football, but I mean, two more results and then next week's podcast, I don't know how well I'll manage to make it through it.
Yes. Well, yeah, I'm sure lots of our listeners will be very jealous to hear that. Yeah, you were at the England Germany game. Perhaps not our German listeners, but that's England came out on top on that occasion, and obviously, yeah, the big win over Ukraine. So are you keeping a lid on the expectations at the moment, or are you one of those in the same boat saying that football's coming home?
Oh, no, I'm the most pessimistic of all supporters, so yeah, just take it one game at a time. Denmark have had a good tournament after the way it started. I mean, with the what happened with Christian Eriksen and whatnot, so they've played really well, so I'm not going to take anything for granted. And then yeah, you get past Denmark, there's two good teams that you could meet in the final. So, yeah, I'm not getting carried away, but it's nice to see England playing well at a major tournament.
Yep, fair enough then. So we're down to the final four, and may the best team win. Yes, that was your Euro 2020 update on J-Talk this week. And, yeah, great to hear that Sam had such a good time at the game. So we'll return to domestic matters with a little bit of housekeeping. We often start our podcasts, especially these days, with a reduced J1 slate and the ACL going on, with some housekeeping. Unfortunately, though, Sam, in recent times, Urawa Reds have been guilty of not dotting all their T's and crossing all their I's, as an administrative error has ultimately cost them a little bit of goal difference, and it's left them pretty red-faced.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, quite an embarrassing situation for them, and God help whoever's fault it was if the league comes down to goal difference for ACL qualification at the end of the season. I mean, yeah, it's unfortunate for Zion Suzuki in particular, because he obviously had to miss the game, as this was, because he had tested negative with a PCR test for the JFA on under 24 duty, but then paperwork was misplaced or mishandled, and it wasn't then put through by Reds to the J-League to make sure he was eligible for their game against Shonan. So he played in that game. Now he then got a one-match ban because of that. They lost that game 3-2, but that was converted to a 3-0 defeat. Yeah, and Suzuki hasn't made it into the team ever since Nishikawa took his chance. So, yeah, I feel really bad for Suzuki, but it's very sloppy for Urawa. I mean, every other team managed to get their paperwork in order, so there is no real excuse, and yeah, they deserve the 3-0 defeat. It's just maybe it was fortunate for them that they lost that game in any case, but yeah, really, really, yeah, poor work from the front office or whoever at Urawa.
Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? And as you say, yeah, all of the other clubs that had under 24 players away on international duty apparently, yeah, did all their housekeeping and got their eggs in line. So it is unfortunate, as you say, for Suzuki that he's lost his place in the team. And as we'll come on to later, yes, Shusaku Nishikawa's been in pretty good form. And, yeah, I guess the only silver lining for Reds is that they lost the game at home to Shonan at the time. Obviously, it was a hugely frustrating defeat. And I guess now that they've had their two goals are chalked off and are now two goals of goal difference worse off, then obviously that stings a little bit. But, yeah, had they won that game and it been converted to a 3-0 defeat, well, that would have been really devastating. But I guess most importantly, though, Sam, at the end of all of this is that the individual records from the game still stand. So, Kasper Juncker fans, don't worry. Your man is still on the seven league goals. His brace in this game wasn't taken away from him.
Well, that's good. I think that would be incredibly harsh if you're taking away goals from players in that game. Yeah, it's fully deserved that they keep those. So, yeah, that's at least some common sense has come out of it if it wasn't always applied, I don't think, in this situation.
Yeah, but I tell you what, though, Sam, you remember who scored the winner in that game for Shawnun, and he's had a lot of goals taken away from him this season. So if they were going to chalk these goals off from this game, well, then, yeah, Okamoto, the Shawnun captain, would have been done in again. But, yeah, as it is, common sense has stood, and the goals do still stand for individual records. But, yeah, so Reds, as we say, are now 2 goals of goal difference worse off. And, yeah, Zion Suzuki is now back to backing up Shusaku Nishikawa. Before we move on to the J1 results from the weekend, Sam, let's just bring the listeners up to date with what's gone on in the past week in the ACL. At this time last week, it was all systems go, but the two Osaka clubs have had a couple of hiccups in the meantime.
Yeah, it's not been gone very well at all, especially for Gamba Osaka, who have drawn 3 of their games already. They 2 with against Chiang Rai United, who they would have expected to beat. They were in a tough situation anyway, in that John Book were in the group, and John Book would be the stronger team that you expect them to top the group. But to get through as one of the 3 best second places, they need a few more points than they're currently on. They're on 6 after 4 games. They've still got to face John Book as well, so realistically they are needing 2 wins from 2, and then still hoping for results in the other groups to go their way. So yeah, it's looking like we might lose Gamba Osaka at this stage. Cerezo as well, as you mentioned, they've had a quite tough group. I think with Cerezo being in the playoffs originally, they haven't necessarily benefited from a weak team coming into their group because of one of the Aussie teams dropping out, so they were the team that benefited and got in. So it's a fairly strong group in terms of the Thai team and the Hong Kong team, Kitchi, who, yeah, they're playing reasonably well. But Cerezo are at least top of that group. I still think they will get through. And, yeah, it's been a lot more plain sailing for Nagoya and Kawasaki.
Yeah, most definitely. So Nagoya, a perfect 5 wins from 5, and they're already confirmed as the winners of Group G. Kawasaki are about to kick off in their 4th group stage game as we record on Monday night. So you will know their result by the time you listen to this podcast on Tuesday or later on in the week, listeners. But yeah, Frontale 3 from 3 at the top of Group I. As Sam says, Cerezo top of Group J, a point ahead of Kitchi of Hong Kong. And yeah, Gamba have it all to do in the final 2 Group H games. They're a point ahead of Chiang Rai, but yeah, both Gamba and Chiang Rai have to play Junbuk and Tampines Rovers of Singapore in their final 2 group stage games. As you say, Sam, they're probably going to have to beat Junbuk, aren't they? And the form they've shown in the first 4 games. I know they did draw their first game with Junbuk, but yeah, what sort of a chance do you give Gamba against the Junbuk team, who look almost certain to top the group, don't they? And whether they'll play a weaker side or not, I doubt they would, but it's pretty much do or die for Gamba in that game, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think, well, maybe if John Book have wrapped up the group already going into that final game, then maybe they'll take pity on Gamba and play a weaker side. But yeah, Gamba have not really looked very good at all. I mean, not all season, but they've struggled in all of their games, really. Nothing's really been clear cut. They've scraped that one victory against Tampines Rovers. They just missed a lot of chances against Chiang Rai, but really they didn't look like putting them away, and their best result was that draw with John Book. So yeah, I really can't see it happening for Gamba. They can't really get top in the group. There's no way, I don't think, that John Book are going to drop points against Chiang Rai in their game to allow Gamba the chance to go top with their 2 victories. And then even with 12 points, there's no guarantee that they finish as one of the top 3 runners-up either. With a lot of the missed match groups, there are going to be a lot of teams that get to at least 12 points. So yeah, it's really tough for Gamba. They're not putting up the goal difference that other teams are. You look at Daegu, second in Kawasaki's group, they're already at plus 11 goal difference and they're second. So yeah, I think it's going to be really tough for Gamba to make it through from there. But of course, we wish them all the best.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, good luck to Gumba in their final two games. And, Cerezo as well. We hope they can wrap up top spot and, join Nagoya and almost certainly Kawasaki in the next round. Okay, so over the weekend, there were six games from J1 Match Day 21 played. Yokohama F. Marinos continue to, hunt down Kawasaki, while Kawasaki are away in Uzbekistan. F. Marinos won for the fifth straight league game on Saturday evening at Kashiwa, but they had to do it the hard way, didn't they, Sam? After a bright start for both teams, the Yuta Kamiya's 30-yard blast for the hosts, Kashiwa, was deflected past the post in just the fourth minute. Then in the 16th minute, Marcos Junior's snapshot on the turn was palmed away by Kim Sung-gyu, as we saw a goal-mouth action at both ends in the first 20 minutes. But then just past the half hour, the moment that I guess looked destined to define this game, Sam, came when Marcos Junior committed a poor-slash-mistimed-slash-petulant, choose-your-adjective-here, listeners, a tackle on Yuta Kamiya from behind, and that led to a VAR review and then a straight red card for the F. Marinos man in the 35th minute. So that obviously put F. Marinos behind the eight ball. What did you think about the decision?
I thought, it was eventually the right decision. I don't know why the referee didn't issue a card, I don't think, live, and he had to be told by his VAR assistant to go and have a check. I thought it was a horrible tackle from Marcos Junior. He's nowhere near the ball, just puts his studs down the back of Kamiya, who then has to go off injured. Yeah, really poor challenge, and yeah, definitely a red card for me. But just, yeah, my biggest disbelief was why the referee hadn't at least issued a yellow card when it first happened. He was given no card and a free kick, so that was pretty poor and deserving of the red card. But after that, as you said, it should have been the catalyst for Kashiwa to go on and win this game. They were coming off the back of kind of stunning scenes last week with their comeback. But yeah, full credit to Marinos dealing with this red card. Hatanaka also got injured later on in the game, so they came up against a lot of adversity, but put in a very good defensive display and took Kashiwa a little bit to the cleaners with a counter attack for their first goal.
Yeah, most definitely. So after the red, and then before they took the lead with 15 minutes left, was there much pressure from Reysol on the F. Marinos goal, or were they able to keep them pretty much at arm's length?
Yeah, I'd say it was reasonable pressure in that Kashiwa had quite a bit of the ball, but Marinos were so well disciplined defensively. They kept them, as you said, at arm's length, and really Kashiwa weren't creating much, and they looked kind of bereft of ideas at the time. They're obviously set up to counter-attack, and then teams can often struggle when they're then thrust into a position where they're favourites for the game, they're expected to go on and win the game and take the game to the opposition, and they really didn't adapt to that. And eventually Marinos just soaked up the pressure and then hit them on the break. I thought, it was a really good disciplined defensive performance from Marinos.
Very good then. Well, they're certainly proving that they're capable of extending this winning run even after the departure of Ange Postecoglou. So the lead then, it came with 15 minutes left. A raking angled ball out of defence from Tiraton landed perfectly on the bootlaces of Daizen Maeda, who swept in across. Kim Sung-gyu got a hand to it, but the ball went straight out to Ado Onaiwu, who spanked in an ice-cool finish. And then just 4 minutes later, Maeda embarrassed Kim to give F. Marinos a two-goal cushion. He charged down the keeper's clearance after he dawdled on a back pass. And, in the blink of an eye, Sam, from nil-nil with a man advantage, Reysol found themselves two goals down. And, I guess they paid the price for not putting more pressure on F. Marinos throughout the course of the game when they had the man advantage.
Yeah, definitely. There's no real excuse when you have such amount of time with them, an extra man. They really didn't test Takeoka enough. And, that didn't take too much, really, from Marinos to go and score. I mean, it's a good long ball from Tiraton. The cross is good from Maeda. I think Kim probably should do better. But, Onaiwu takes that down well. It's a really good finish. And then, for then you when you're 1-0 down and you think, oh, you've got to regroup, you don't want your goalkeeper dallying over a clearance. It's not really anything. The sort of ball out he's trying to play hits Maeda, and then Kim just stands there and shrugs, and you know, it's just another mistake from Kim, which is, I mean, it's just happening far too often, I think, at the moment. He is a very good goalkeeper when he's concentrating, and it's just, yeah, last few weeks, maybe this season, I just think he's, yeah, cost his team a few goals, and Cash were in the position they're in. They can't afford their goalkeeper to be doing that, so, yeah, I thought it was really poor, but credit Maeda for his closing down, yeah, and yeah, he finished it off, well, pretty easily.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And, well, yeah, now more than likely to be leading the line for Japan at the Olympics. And this was, yeah, another all-action display from Daisen Maeda, who continues to impress. So, yeah, F. Marino's with a 2-0 lead with 10 minutes to go then. Mao Hosoya did give Reysol hope in the closing stages with his first J1 goal, firing past Yohei Takaoka after Dodi had nodded down Richardson's cross. But, yes, F. Marino's saw out the game to notch, as I said earlier, their fifth straight league win, and they're now 12 points behind Kawasaki with two games in hand. So I guess, yeah, this is all we could ask of F. Marinos, wasn't it, Sam, to keep up their end of the bargain while Frontale were away. Obviously, the lead was so vast at the time that Frontale departed for the ACL. But, yeah, you just have to give F. Marinos enormous credit, don't you? I mean, they haven't always been pretty during this five-game winning run. But, yeah, I mean, they really showed their mettle in a game like this on Saturday, as we said, a man down, and to claim all 3 points as they did, I think it says a lot about them, and yeah, their potential to really turn this into a proper title race.
Yeah, I've tried to say for most of the season that I don't think it's going to happen, but they've answered a lot of critics, especially in the wake of Postecoglou leaving. Maybe it's not been as pretty and as free-flowing as it was under Postecoglou, but they've got the results. They've come back after that break with three straight victories. And yeah, I was just really impressed with the way that they dealt with going a man down. You did kind of imagine that maybe previously they'd be a little bit more expansive, even down to 10 men, and maybe leave themselves a bit open. But they managed this game really, really well and knew that they had the options on the break when they're leaving Maeda and Anaiwa up. So I thought, yeah, just game management was perfect in this one. It has been in the last couple of games to beat a stubborn Tosu side and a stubborn Tokushima side. So yeah, I've been really impressed. They've beaten what's in front of them. They then go to they've got a Vispa next week. Another one of their games in hand, they'd expect to go and win that. So, yeah, I hope for, as a neutral, that they get within that 6 points once the games in hand are all played out, and we can have a really exciting title race. And, yeah, credit to Marinos if they do pull that off, because, as I've said many times, I didn't expect them to.
No, fair enough. And so, yeah, just before we leave this game, from a racehole perspective then, obviously, yeah, as you said yourself, coming in on such a high after last week's crazy comeback against Shonan, and I guess, it's kind of one step forward, two steps back here, because as we've said numerous times, yeah, with the man advantage, they've not made it count. And I guess this is just the latest example of Kashiwa's struggles this season. They can turn in a performance last week, but really in the last, in second half stoppage time, wasn't it really? They came from 2-1 down and they, you know, they had what we thought conceded two other perfectly legitimate goals that VAR ruled out. So, I mean, they should have been dead and buried in that game by the time second half stoppage time came around. And while they do deserve enormous credit for the way they kept on going and then ultimately ran out 4-2 winners against Shonan, with such an advantage in this game, another frustrating result for racehole fans to stomach.
Yeah, because as you said, I don't think they played that well last week, but they got those three goals. You'd expect a bit of momentum to go with them. And then once the opposition Marinos are down to 10 men, you kind of must think, okay, things are maybe are turning for us. They're going our way. But they just didn't take advantage of that. I just thought the substitutions were quite poor. I mean, Kami was forced off at halftime, but they brought on Doddy, who was a much deeper line player. They had Cristiano on the bench and didn't bring him on till after the hour mark. And I thought, if you're going to have to go for this game, you won't get a better chance of beating Marinos, but I thought they were still quite negative. Osoya does come on, the striker that they had on the bench, but not until they're 2-0 down. I just thought, yeah, it was really negative. They didn't feel like they could go for it, and they didn't maybe have the self-belief, but yeah, it's another defeat. Then next week they've got Kashima Antlers, which is another tough game before the Olympic break. If they lose that game, they could well find themselves in the relegation places during that Olympic break, and their front office might decide that's a good time for a change, and maybe Nelsinho has to go, because yeah, they've had a few signs this season where it looks like they might be turning the corner, but then they just drop again. So it was really disappointing performance, this one from Ray Solund. I think next week is a really big game for them.
Yeah, most definitely. So F. Marino is the only away team to win in the six games over the weekend. And another frustrating result for Raisel, as we said. Their victims last week, Ashunan, could have been forgiven for feeling sorry for themselves and starting a bit flat on their trip to Kobe on Saturday. But instead, they caught Kobe flat-footed in the 12th minute when Tariq El-Yanoussi, who was one of the players victimised by VAR last week, cut out a loose Sergi Samper pass in midfield and burst forward. He took a return pass from Shuto Machino and dinked home in off the Kobe keeper Daya Maekawa to give Shonan an early lead. So, this was just the medicine that Shonan needed, wasn't it, Sam? And El-Yanoussi himself, a league goal of the season after he'd had what we thought was a perfectly legitimate one taken away from him last week.
Yeah, I was very happy for him, and he takes full advantage of own goals not being given in the J-League, because his effort is going wide before it's touched by Maekawa, but I don't think he will mind, and I don't think Shonan minded at the time. I thought, yeah, it was a good start from them. They were pressing Kobe in midfield, because Kobe liked to pass it around. They liked to take their time, but Shonan were right in on them. They got the ball. Got a perfect start by the looks of it in this game. And yeah, you were thinking maybe, okay, yeah, Shonan, difficult team to beat, especially when they go 1-0 up. And yeah, they look like they might be on their way to kind of righting the wrongs of last week, but Kobe had other ideas.
Yeah, most definitely. It was Samper who gave the ball away for the first goal, who made amends just 5 minutes later. His perfectly weighted through ball sent Kyogo Furuhashi away, and the lethal striker, who's been in terrific form, finished in off Daiki Tomi, shooting through the keeper's legs with the ball taking a deflection off for Tomi. But yeah, going into the net. Kobe lost Andres Iniesta to injury shortly before half-time, but there was still time for Hotaru Yamaguchi to give the hosts the lead heading into the break. In the first minute of stoppage time, Shonan's sloppiness in midfield was punished. Yamaguchi played the ball out to Douglas on the left and continued his run before glancing in a superb near-post header from Douglas's cross. So, unfortunately for Shonan, Sam, all that good work in the early going was wiped out. Sampa's pass was excellent for Furuhashi, and then, a terrific near-post header from Yamaguchi, wasn't it?
Yeah, it kind of forced Kobe to be a little bit more direct, and when they're direct, that's when they're the biggest threat. I mean, so many goals that they've scored this season have been through that combination of Samper to Furuhashi, just playing through the lines, either a dink ball or one of these where it just kind of cut the Shonan defence apart. And then in a similar manner with the Yamaguchi goal, where it was just his driving run through the defence, it causes all sorts of issues. It's very direct. Douglas puts in a terrific cross, and a diving header is always one of my favourite goals, so I was quite happy to see that go in. But I think Yamaguchi deserves a lot of credit actually this season, which maybe I haven't given him enough of, but his all-round performance in midfield, he does absolutely everything in there, the kind of engine of the Kobe team, and just to see him bursting in, getting a well-deserved goal, it was full credit to him for the desire he showed. But Kobe, they turned that game around, the kind of losing that goal early, then losing a player like Iniesta to injury, and they go on to lose, I think, three more players to injury. So they were fighting against it in this game. But I thought, yeah, their turnaround was, yeah, very, very good, and it was worthy of a team fighting for the ACL places.
Yeah, absolutely. They are now up to third in the table ahead of Grampus on goal difference after a 3-1 win. Yes, we'll get to the third goal now, listeners. It came just past the hour when the man who replaced Iniesta, Yuta Nakasaka, volleyed in a deep cross from the left from Furuhashi, though Tomi was furious with Satoshi Tanaka's feeble attempt to deal with the lofted ball into the box. So, yeah, don't blink, Sam, but, yeah, suddenly Kobe are up in third. As we said, a goal difference ahead of Nagoya. And, yeah, after a third straight league win, there are several games unbeaten now. And I don't know, have they finally finally turned the corner? How many times have we talked about that over the past 2 or 3 years? But, yeah, this, again, this was a victory against the team 14th in the table, so we won't be getting too carried away. But, yeah, they've come from behind here. They've ultimately run out convincing winners. And, as you said, when we're talking about F. Marinos, you can only beat the teams in front of you. And Kobe are doing that with a pleasing regularity these days. And with Grampus away, they have made hay, and they sit third pretty much on merit, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely on merit. I mean, it's always maybe too early to say that they've turned the corner, because they'll always let you down in the end, Kobe. But so far this season, I can't complain about them. They've figured out this system that they're playing with, this 4-4-2 diamond with Iniesta at the point of it, giving him a bit of a free role. He doesn't have to work at the defensive part of the game. They don't get caught out going too slowly in midfield in the build-up, because Yamaguchi and Samper are looking to go a lot quicker. And then Furuhashi and Douglas as the front two, they're working really well together. Douglas, I thought, had a slow season last year at Kobe, especially in the ACL at the end. I mean, he was pretty dreadful in that tournament. But yeah, they've worked really well together up front, and it's just looking like the pieces are all kind of falling together for them. I mean, if they get Nagatomo in at left back as well, I mean, then they've got a terrific squad. But I mean, as I said, they picked up four injuries in this. It also brings Hiroki Ikura in, because Maekawa got an injury, so you never know what he could do against his own team. But yeah, it's looking very good for them, and I am enjoying watching Kobe play. They, as you said, on their third on merit, and yeah, long may it continue for Kobe supporters.
Okay, next we'll talk about the team fifth in the table, Urawa Reds, who, as we mentioned right at the start of the episode, had the frustration of the administrative error take two goals of goal difference off them. And then on Saturday, they had the chance to join Kobe and Nagoya on 37 points when they headed up to Sendai. But, well, not for the first time this season or the past couple of seasons, Sam. Jakub Slovic was in inspired form for Sendai between the sticks. And, well, yeah, especially in the first half, he was a one-man wall keeping Urawa at bay.
Yeah, I mean, how many times do we say it? He's a terrific goalkeeper. The first one, Juncker has a header from maybe 4 or 5 yards out. It's a point-blank save. I'm not sure how much Slovic knows about it, but makes himself big and makes a save. There were other ones from Yuruki in that first half and Nishi. And then I think the best of them were just at the start of the second half, where Koizumi gets the ball, he shoots low into the corner, Slovic gets down really well, then he's up immediately for Junker's rebound. So yeah, another terrific performance from Slovic in the Sendai goal. And the same can be said really for Nishikawa as well, because yeah, he's come in, he obviously got kicked out of the Reds team after a poor performance against Avispa, but he's come back in, a little bit of luck, but he's taking his chances as well. He made one very good save from Matsushita right at the start of the second half, and then there was a terrific one where young Kato gets in down the left hand side, good shot, and Nishikawa gets the faintest of touches onto the post. It was a terrific piece of goalkeeping from him, and that was the story for the first 50 minutes or so. It was just two very good goalkeepers keeping each team at bay. Maybe Reds could have created a little bit more. Maybe they were a little bit pedestrian in the way they built up. But yeah, full credit to both goalkeepers.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, you mentioned Nishikawa tipping a Kato shot onto the post, and then he claimed Shuhei Akasaki's curler seconds later after the ball had rebounded back off the post. And then apparently we've got a request from Ryan Steele to play the jingle and to yet to talk about a couple of incidents, Sam. So without any further ado, here comes... This Week in VAR. This Week in VAR. This Week... All right, Sam. So, yeah, shortly after Nishikawa claims from Akasaki, well, yeah, all hell breaks loose and Thomas Deng is booked. That's later rescinded. But, yeah, talk us through what happened. It was all a bit of a hodgepodge and it took far too long, as is the J-League's want with VAR.
Yeah, it is my biggest bugbear with the way VAR is used. It just takes forever. When it starts... kind of off camera while they're showing a replay, and they're playing out from the back, and Deng gets kind of caught by Akasaki. He goes down and handles the ball, so the referee gives a yellow card. This is at a 52-42, so he starts talking with his official, and it's like they're long lost friends and they're having a catch up, how their holidays have been, what the kids are up to. I mean, they go on forever. This takes a good, what, 2.5 minutes of chatting before they eventually go over to the booth to have a look at, but the pitch side monitor. Sorry, they then spend another minute checking whether this is handball, whether this is red card, whether it's denying of a goal scoring opportunity, which it would be. But they fail to recognise throughout this entire thing that Akasaki, in order to cause the handball, just clears out Dengo straight through the back of him. So yeah, we're talking like 4 minutes that goes on here where they're checking things before they finally look at the foul and finally give the decision that Akasaki had fouled Deng. And it just took absolutely forever. It was so simple to you look at it the first time, it is so obvious that Akasaki just comes through the back and fouls Deng. This should be taking 10 seconds, 15 seconds at most. And it is how it has finally been working in the Euros. If anyone has been watching that, they're making decisions quickly. And there's no excuse for this referee to have taken 4 minutes over this decision. And then, yeah, he just carried on. Not long afterwards, there is a shout for handball on Sekiguchi at the other end. It's hit the base of his elbow that's really tucked in as he turns away from the shot. He might not even be in the area, but so this again should take 5 seconds to look at. It's not a penalty, but they then take over a minute on this one, so it was just a complete waste of time. That's 5 minutes of everyone's lives that has been wasted. Nobody knows what's going on in the stands. Nobody really knows what's going on watching on TV either. So this was just really frustrating, and yeah, just another terrible use of VAR from the referee. It was just, yeah, pretty incompetent, I thought.
This Week in VAR. This Week in VAR. This Week. So, Sam, did this just kill all the buzz from this game? Because we just seen both teams make a bright start to the start of the second half. As you said, Koizumi and Juncker forced a brilliant double save from Slovic. And then, yeah, Nishikawa's done the same from Kato and Akasaki. And from there, not even the introduction of the Sendai killer, Shinzo Kuroki, could rouse Reds to life. And, yeah, I guess the game, well, it didn't quite peter out to a 0-0 draw, but I guess the writing was on the wall. It looked like the buzz just went out of it after all those VAR delays.
Yeah, exactly what happened. It was an incredible first 7 minutes of the second half, end-to-end stuff, all action. And then, yeah, for the next 10 minutes, most of it was spent checking with VAR and just wasting everybody's time. And it just kind of took the wind out of the sails of the game. And it took forever, really, for any team to kind of get a foothold back into it and start creating chances, which Reds kind of did towards the end of the game. But, yeah, it just completely ruined the game for me, and it was completely avoidable. So yeah, really disappointing for anyone that was watching that game, because yeah, it was looking like a really exciting match, but yeah, as you said, just kind of petered out.
Yeah, so I guess for Sendai, any point is gratefully accepted these days. Reds will obviously see this as a missed opportunity and 2 points dropped after coming in on the back of two straight wins. But I don't know, were we slightly getting ahead of ourselves, overreacting perhaps to a couple of Reds' recent excellent performances. I mean, they are still very much a work in progress, aren't they? And I mean, the fact that they're fifth in the table halfway through the season is, I guess, ahead of almost everybody's expectations, definitely yours and mine to begin with. But so I guess, you know, the Red supporters won't want to hear this after a frustrating draw like that. But, I mean, as I said, they're slightly ahead of schedule and they're probably going to have to stomach a few more results like this before the end of the season.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think when Ryan Steele was last on, he was kind of saying about eighth was where he was expecting Reds to finish this season, and that I think they should still exceed that, and it will be seen as a very good season for him. He's still doing a major rebuild. He's still got three players to come into the team that they've signed with Inosaka, Sakai, and Schultz, so that is only going to improve this team. So I think, yeah, this is a disappointing result, but generally speaking, the performances have been quite good in the last couple of months. You can clearly see that there is an improvement, that it's, the team are getting used to the system that Rodriguez is putting into place, and probably sooner than most people would have expected. So, yeah, while this is a disappointing result, and there have been a couple of disappointing results along the way, like that Shonan game, which they lost 3-2, now 3-0. So, but otherwise, yeah, I've been really impressed with them. So, yeah, I just think you don't have to get ahead of themselves, Reds supporters. I don't think missing out on the ACL this season is necessarily a bad thing, really. I think where they are is above expectations, and they're only going to get better with the recruitment that they seem to be doing.
Yes, indeed. All right, so we'll move on to the other draw from the weekend. It came down at the Edion Stadium in Hiroshima, and Reds supporters returned back from Sendai frustrated, then the home supporters of Sanfrecce would have been tearing their hair out in a second half stoppage time here, Sam, because it looked like their team was set to run out 1-0 winners over Tosu, but instead were undone by a long ball forward, and what happened in the immediate aftermath of that. But, failing to clear a long ball has ultimately cost Hiroshima, after they had taken an impressive lead just past the hour when Junior Santos stroked home after Yoshifumi Kashiwa had dribbled into the box and laid the ball off for the Brazilian striker. Santos scored past Park Il-gyu, who had earlier saved very impressively from Ezekiel and Hayao Kawabe, but nothing he could do about Santos' shot. And then, unfortunately for Sanfrecce, nothing that Keisuke Osako could do, Sam, about Noriyoshi Sakai's equaliser in the first minute of second half stoppage time. I guess Tosu do deserve enormous credit for keeping on going in the game, for not dropping their heads and for not giving up a deserved equaliser, but yet more frustration for Hiroshima, more points dropped at home.
Yeah, very frustrating for them, and it was also, they played very well, and this was Hayao Kawabe's farewell game. It was all going really well for him until Park then makes that save to deny him a final goal for Hiroshima. But yeah, it was just disappointing. They were the better team against the Tosu side, who haven't been outplayed very often this season, but Hiroshima were doing that. They were creating all the chances, only for a pretty inspired performance from the Tosu goalkeeper. And then the equaliser, it's quite unfortunate. Yes, Tosu have kept going, but it's a shot from Koyamatsu that is deflected horribly right into the path of Sakai, who couldn't miss from where he was. And Tosu have kind of got away with one and got a draw. I think they were a little bit unfortunate with that, but yeah, Hiroshima, you've got to take your chances, and that's kind of what they haven't been doing for most of this season. Junior Santos scored in this game, but there are other chances that maybe he could have taken, and maybe some others could have taken as well. But yeah, I think generally speaking, the performance was pretty good for Hiroshima, but yeah, it'll be a real kick in the teeth to have drawn that one. And then, I mean, how they go on for the rest of the season without Kawabe, who has been clearly their best player, and they're only mid-table as it is. Well, do they drop a bit further? Because there aren't many options behind him. You're looking at a 36-year-old Shibasaki that might go into midfield, or Heiner out of position, or maybe they turn to a youngster. But yeah, he's going to be a real big loss. And yeah, it's going to be, I think, a harder end to the season for Hiroshima. And they'll be, just to add to the disappointment of this result.
Yeah, most definitely. It's just one loss in their last eight, but four of those games have been drawn, so they haven't really been able to put any pressure on the teams above them. And as you say, Sam, to lose Kawabe now at this stage of the season, well, to lose him at any time would be really devastating, but clearly their best player, and you wonder how they'll do going forward. For Kawabe then, it's a really interesting move, isn't it, to the Swiss side Grasshoppers. Have any of your colleagues at Football Radar who follow the Swiss league been in touch with you? And I'm sure you've been glowing in your praise. What's the consensus? How do you think he's going to do over there?
Well, I will be glowing in my praise when he gets back off holiday and I start talking to him about it.
Right.
But, yeah, the Swiss guy is enjoying a nice, well-earned piece of time off. But, yeah, I'm really looking forward to Kawabe playing there. It's an interesting league to go to. It's not necessarily one of the top five leagues at all, and it's not really a league that many Japanese players go to. But I think Yuya Kubo played very well for the Young Boys and maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and I think it's a really open league. It's one where I think he will fit in quite nicely, as he's kind of an all-round midfielder that's really added that kind of late burst into the area to get his goals. And I think he will fit in very nicely there. I look forward to watching a bit more Swiss football. I haven't done that for a while, but it's a really open and exciting league. So, if anyone has the chance to follow a few Grasshopper games, I'm sure they'll be pretty excited by them. But I think it's a really good move for him. It's not too high a level for him. It'll ease him in quite nicely, and I think it will really suit him. So, all the best to him. It's just a well-earned move. I think he's played tremendously for a long while now. I started watching him when I first started watching the J League. Actually, he was at Jubilo Iwata on loan. He came through there tremendously with Yuki Kobayashi, and then had a partnership with Shinsuke Nakamura. And since moving back to Hiroshima, I think he's just blossomed into one of the better midfielders in the league. So fully deserved, and I look forward to seeing how well he does there.
Yeah, brilliant stuff, and good luck over there, Hayao, and I'm sure we'll see him in national team squads in the years to come. So, a lot of people will be taking a keen interest in the Swiss league from this point forward. I would wager Hiroshima fans mostly. Of course. Okay, so we've got two games left from the weekend, both games from Sunday, and both ended up as 1-0 home wins. Sam, you were roused from your slumber, or whether you got back to sleep at all after England's game is, you can share with that as much information as you'd like to about that. But, over there for you, Sapporo versus Tokushima was a very early kickoff. For us over here in Japan, it was a lunchtime kickoff, and played in terrific conditions, unlike most of the country where rainy season has well and truly dug its claws in. But the weather was probably one of the major talking points, Sam, in a game that there didn't appear an enormous amount happened, although Tokushima were inches away from taking the lead 8 minutes before the break, weren't they, when Ken Iwao's shot was hacked off the line by Ryota Aoki, with Takanori Sugano beaten, but Aoki managed to hook the ball away and into the grateful grasp of Sugano.
Yeah, it was really good aware defending from Aoki to get back, but I mean, that was pretty much it for the first half, wasn't it? I think there was another one where Komai made a mistake and Watai had a shot deflected, but otherwise very little happened, which is a surprise really with Sapporo, because they usually make me get up in the summer at 5 a.m. or whatnot, but usually it's a pretty exciting game, and this, absolutely wasn't really. It was Sapporo didn't play too well, and Tokushima, I'm beginning to really dislike Tokushima under Danny Poyatos. They just play the ball. They have possession for possession's sake. They don't go anywhere with it. Yeah, they create one chance in this game that was fairly clear cut, but generally speaking, they don't create too much, and just they're really dull. So I had to go and have a look at what it was like under Poyatos, just looking at some very basic stats. Their average possession in the 11 games is 59%. Really good. It sounds amazing. They've only scored 5 goals in 11 games, and they average less than 2 shots on target a game. They have the ball, but what's the point of it? They're not going anywhere. They've lost 8 of their 11 games. It's just really appalling under Poyatos. I just can't stand watching them. And considering that they didn't necessarily win every game under Komoto at the start of the season, 4 wins out of 10, and they were still having decent possession, but they were just having so many more chances. They were getting forward a lot more. They just were a more exciting team to watch. And at the moment, they're just kind of going down meekly and with the disguise that a lot of possession means they're a decent team, when really they're just not. And they're just conceding sloppy goals as well. I mean, against Tokyo, it was a Kaká error. Last week, it was one defender booting it off the other and into the net. And they did exactly the same here. And if you're going to concede sloppy goals without creating chances yourselves, I mean, you're going to lose most of your games. And they just continue their slow slide towards relegation.
Yeah, they'd won so many admirers, hadn't they, in the first couple of months of the season. And then, yeah, I mean, it's such a shame for Poyatos. But, yeah, since he's come in, yeah, I mean, you can clearly point to that moment as being the moment where their results have turned for far the worse. And I'm sure he's pulling his hair out about it. But as you say, yeah, he's got to spark up his ideas, because whatever was working before is, he's flicked a switch, and everything's turned to poop since he's arrived. So that's, really difficult for Vortis fans to take, I'm sure, as they were looking comfortable in mid-table and now are flirting with the relegation zone. And as you say, Sam, if they continue on in this vein, well, they've basically got no hope at all with still a full half of the season still to be played. I mean, they did lose this very unfortunate circumstances, as you say, for the second straight week, a known goal conceded when one defender kicks the ball in off another. In this case, it was Takeru Kishimoto, his attempted clearance cannoning in off Shota Fukuoka. But whichever way you slice it, yeah, it wasn't good enough for Tokushima after that chance just before halftime for Iwao. They didn't take that. And then, they didn't really threaten for the rest of the game. And while Sapporo weren't pulling up any trees, ultimately, yeah, they've won at home. And, they sit comfortably in mid-table now in 11th. And the final game of the weekend, Sam, on Sunday, was at Nihon Daira, where Shimizu hosted Oita. I think I billed this in last week's episode as a relegation dogfight six-pointer, but Espols might have just enough breathing room for at least until after the Olympic break. After this 1-0 home win, that saw them rise to 13th in the table. Thiago Santana denied twice early on. Then up the other end, Seigo Kobayashi's rasping shot was tipped around the post by Shuichi Gonda, who had a lot of influence on this game in the closing stages. Midway through the second half, Espols took the lead. Eiichi Katayama's bundled effort from a corner was palmed off the line by William Popp. I don't know, Sam, if we had the goal line technology in the J-League, that goal might have been given. But anyway, Valdo was first to the loose ball, and crossed from the right, Teruki Hara firing through traffic from 6 yards for his first league goal of the season. So, yeah, again, I guess in a similar vein to the Sapporo Tokushima game, Sam, the home team kind of just wore down their opponent here. Oita's early chance for Kobayashi, which, I mean, was all of 35 yards, it would have been a miraculous goal. But, yeah, there wasn't really much else happening for Oita, at least until Shimizu took the lead.
Yeah, I mean, Oita, they don't attack very well, really. I mean, yeah, they have that one long-range shot, but so often they kind of get to about 40 yards out and think, oh, it's time to cross it in. And, I mean, it gives Nagasawa no chance if you're just launching hopeful balls into him and there's nobody around him. I mean, Machida and Kobayashi are the two players that should be getting up with him, but they just defend so deep. They're always so far away from him, it completely isolates him, and they're not really able to create much from that. I mean, yeah, he might be able to get his head to it, but he's not going to score with a kind of weak cross pumped into him. And yeah, they just don't really get the bodies forward. They've brought in Hiroto Goya over the weekend from Kashua, so maybe if they try and play him alongside Nagasawa, he might be able to get some of the knockdowns and they might be able to form a partnership. But yeah, really, it's quite easy to defend. And they had that one chance right at the end where Issa has a flying header, but it's such a difficult header for him to score. I mean, Gonda, it's a good save, but it's one that he would expect to make. And really, it's so difficult for Reuter to create any sort of clear-cut chances, and it's fairly easy for most teams to defend against. And Espoirs, they've kind of played in a similar manner, but they did get forward a little bit better. Their crosses were better, and Santana is just, he's a little bit more able to make something out of nothing, and he caused a few chances, and Pop made several pretty good saves in this game, and they took advantage of the one time where the ball just fell quite loose in the penalty area and scored. It was, yeah, pretty poor game. Espoirs, I think, edged it. And, yeah, they've got themselves a little bit of breathing room, whereas Oita, yeah, still stuck in the mire.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, for what passes as Oita throwing their kitchen sink at things, yeah, they did have a crack in the last few minutes, didn't they? As you say, Gonda tipped over Kohei Issa's header, and then in a frantic finale, really. Espoirs captain Ryo Takeuchi had to clear Arata Watanabe's deflected shot off the line, with the hosts going straight up the other end, and Hara sending over an inch-perfect cross, only for Pop to save spectacularly from Akira Desaro's bullet header. So it did end 1-0 to Espoirs, a much-needed victory for them. Three unbeaten now, and as we say, a little bit of breathing room with the Olympic break looming, and things looking slightly rosier under Lotina. I guess the main thing, Sam, we can say with some certainty that there definitely are four worse teams than the Espoirs at this stage of the season. So they are not quite nudging up towards mid-table, but yeah, they've got themselves a little bit of breathing room, as we said, and Oita are, they're stuck right down in it, but they're still only 4 points from safety, so it does promise to be a long, hot summer after the team's return from the Olympic break, and there's certainly a lot of moving and shaking to go on in the relegation zone in the second half of the season. So, yeah, those are the six games from the weekend wrapped up. I don't know. Yeah, Sam, we don't want to undersell anything, but it was a slightly underwhelming set of fixtures at the outset, wasn't it? And, I mean, it's good to see F. Marinos and Vissel carry on their winning ways as, firstly, we hope that F. Marinos can latch on to Frontale and make it a tighter race. And then, if Kobe can carry on their good form, then we should have a proper scrap for the other ACL places as well.
Yeah, I really think so, especially in that for an ACL berth where Nagoya will come back. They're playing very well in the ACL. Reds, when they get their extra players in, they should be a good force, and that you can't say they won't be challenging for the ACL places. And I still think Kashima Antlers just come good eventually, and they go on a run, and they do what they did last season and really make a fight of it towards the end of the season. You've got Tosu in there, they've kind of dropped off a little bit, so maybe they might not be in there, but they've got the players in their first 11 to challenge. And then FC Tokyo, if they, I mean, you play your Otridente, you never know what can happen with FC Tokyo. So I'm really hoping for a good end of season. But yeah, this weekend was a little bit underwhelming. But I mean, I'm watching the Euros, so I'm happy for this to be a little bit quieter for the next couple of weeks.
No, fully understand that, mate. All right, so this weekend we'll see seven games from match day 22, which takes us technically to the Olympic break, although, of course, there still will be a number of games involving the ACL clubs taking place once they return to Japan throughout the break until the league as a whole resumes on Monday, the 9th of August. So of the three games on Saturday and four on Sunday, what stands out to you for a pick of the weekend, Sam? For me personally, a Shonan hosting FC Tokyo is the one game of the year I'm usually allowed out for, but a Sunday 7 p.m. kickoff clashes with my son's swimming lesson, so I don't like my chances, i.e. I have no chance whatsoever of making it to that game. But I'm sure that wasn't going to be your pick of the weekend anyway, so of the seven games, so what tickles your fancy?
Well, I mean, I don't like to pick the same team both weeks, but I'm going to go with Kashima again. I think that game against Kashima, as I said earlier, I think it's such an important game for Kashima before the Olympic break. If they end up dropping in there, I think there are a lot of people in trouble, Nelsinho namely. And I think Kashima, I really think they've got this ACL push in them. They played very well against Sapporo last time out with that 4-0 victory. So if they can carry on and just, yeah, really put a string of results together, I think they'll be a real force for the end of the season. So, yeah, that game would probably be the pick of the games. And the other one I would look at is one of those potential relegation six-pointers just outside the drop zone with Tokushima and Shimizu. And, yeah, Shimizu, if they can win that game, they've cut themselves a very, very nice cushion going into it. But if Ortiz can find a victory from somewhere, then Esports are dragged right back into it. So I think that one's quite an interesting game, but I wouldn't bank on it being particularly exciting.
No, well, let's find out if, Danny Poyatos has been listening and, printed out your words about his team and posted them up on the dressing room wall. Might send the players out ready to run through a brick wall for Poyatos. We'll wait and see. But, on recent form, I wouldn't be expecting too much when they host Shimizu at the Pokhari Sweat Stadium. I guess from a personal point of view, even though I won't be able to go, it'll be good to see FC Tokyo back in action. I must say, Sam, it was a very relaxing weekend with the FC Tokyo not in action. It caused me no stress whatsoever. So it was a very, very enjoyable and relaxing despite the weather. But I guess I'll be looking to see if Fukuoka, who were of course off this past weekend, you'll notice, listeners, we haven't mentioned them so far this episode. What they can do when they visit Mitsuzawa and take on the Yokohama F Marinos, because not quite in the same vein to Tokushima, but they have been struggling, of course, in recent times. Fukuoka winless in their past four games, so let's see what they're capable of against basically the toughest test in the league at the moment, with the four ACL teams away when they travel to face the Yokohama F Marinos. So, some interesting looking games on the slate at both ends of the table. And obviously, Sam, will be, I'm not sure what state you're going to be in if England keep on winning in the Euros. But, can I pin you down for a commitment to record next week's podcast, or will we have to check in later on in the week?
I can promise you I'll be awake by 2:00 in the afternoon. Don't know if I could have done it much earlier, but I'll be here.
All right, that's great stuff. Commitment to the cause, absolutely fantastic. And, we don't play favourites here necessarily on JTalk, good luck, Sam, to the England national team the rest of the way. And indeed, as I said earlier, to the remaining countries, may football be the winner at the end of the day. That's all we can really ask for. So, all right, Sam. Well, that's committed then. Thank you very much, and we'll speak to you again next week.
Sounds good. Look forward to catching up with you again next week.
All right. Well, that is it then for this week's episode of the JTalk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. And it goes without saying, listeners, we'd also like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up the final round of games before the Olympic break. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The JTalk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.